Should we take the Torah seriously? Most people, when they go and they read many different topics, albeit in the text of the Bible or in the words of the rabbis, they feel like it's not so literal. They feel like they can't understand it. It's too hard. However, the Torah tells us that ki karov elecha hadavar me'od, that this thing is very, very close for you. It says it's not over the sea, it's not in heaven, and it's referring to the Torah, which means the Torah always has an explanation, something which is close to us, which we can understand. When we come to Parah Aduma, the topic which everyone views as so mystical, beyond, and distant from them, we have to know that it's really close to us. There's something about it which we can all take. And Be'ez Hashem, we're going to figure that out together. There's a story, a personal story that I know the facts of it firsthand. It's a friend of mine that he was getting married and unfortunately didn't have any money for his wedding. There was someone in the yeshiva that he was in who decided to do a collection for him, raise the funds for his suits, for the kalas, jewelry, for parts of the wedding itself, and the person was blown away. Not only did the person raise funds for this boy, not only did he raise funds for him, he as well took him around all over the place to every single thing, to his suits, to his shoes. He went from zero to 100, me'alu me'ever, above and beyond, for this boy who needed money. And Baruch Hashem, he got married. And the morning after the wedding, the chassan, now married man, calls up this other boy, or this other man, who raised for him the money and did everything for him. And he said, oh my gosh, I forgot mezuzahs. So the guy goes like, oh man, I've been driving around this guy for 2 weeks. I did a fundraiser for him, but what am I going to do? He needs help. The guy who got the call asks him, how many mezuzahs do you need? He said, 5. He says, okay. He gets in a cab. They lived in the same town. He goes over to the sofer. He drives there, whatever. He takes the cab, gets out, speaks to the sofer, gets the mezuzahs, goes to his friend, goes up, knocks on his door, he answers, and the guy looks at him like very uncomfortably. Here's your mezuzahs, what's wrong? And he says, I actually need 6 mezuzahs. And you can imagine how uncomfortable this was, because the guy had already been, he raised money for him, he'd been driving around for weeks, he'd been doing everything for him, and now on the drop of a dime, he goes and gets the mezuzahs, and now he has to go back again. So he says, sure, no problem. This guy's a newly married guy. You know, newly married guys barely you can get to their shirts on in the morning. And he gets back in the cab, goes to the cipher, tells him he's another mezuzah. So they start going through mezuzahs together. And while this person is there, you know, he had a family. He has sedarim. And he was giving it up for someone else. And he feels like he's like this big, you know, big tzaddik, a good guy. He's helping this other person, giving up of his time, his learning, and he always had a question, is it worth it? Is it really the right thing? I'm giving up my sedarim. I'm giving up time with my family. I'm giving up so many things to help this boy. And now it's like this chassan, and now it's like, over the top. But he saw it was the only option, and he felt, okay, this is what I have to do. So now he's speaking with his sofer a second time, and they're schmoozing while they're getting the mezuzahs. And they get onto the topic of leaving tefillin in the car. And the person who was getting the mezuzahs, this person who raised the money, etc., he said to the sofer that when he was in high school, he was the only one of his friends who would go to Minyan. He was the only one. And all of his other friends would either not put on tefillin or put on tefillin in their homes and leave it there and then go to camp for the day. However, this person, again, the one who would raise the money, etc., not just to get lost in the story, he, when he was in the same period of life in high school, he would wake up in the morning, go to Minyan, and then go to camp. To work. Where would his tefillin be the whole entire time? They would be in the car. The sofer face drops. He says, you have to get your tefillin checked. Do you ever get them checked? He said, no, not since then, maybe before then, but no, I didn't get checked since then. He says, if your tefillin were in the car, they are melted, they're pustle, you have to get them checked immediately. So, okay, he's like, now he's ice mensch. He goes and gives the guy a mezuzah, finishes up the story. Now the chassan has all the mezuzahs. Now we're back to this guy. He's all upset. Why all of his friends didn't go to Minyan, didn't daven, and now they have kosher tefillin. Me, said the man, who went and was meisher nefesh to go to Minyan, and of everyone who didn't go, I'm going to have pasul tefillin. How is that fair? How does that make sense? He goes and gets tefillin checked. The tefillin were not melted at all. They were completely intact. However, the innate structure of the tefillin were horrible. They had many different halachic questions, and it boiled down to a certain halachic shaila, and it ended up being pasul. But it wasn't because he left him in the car. Because he left him in the car, because he had gone to Minyan in his youth, he had now gotten his tefillin checked earlier. He wouldn't have gotten his tefillin checked for who knows how long, another couple of years. But because he had gone to Minyan earlier, because when he was in high school, he was moshe nefesh all those days, did he finally find out about his tefillin, saving him years, where he was able to wear tefillin sooner every single day. The unbelievable part of that story, besides the hashkacha, you think you know better, you think you're upset at Hashem, because Hashem, you went to Minyan moshe nefesh, and now it caused you pasul tefillin, and really, pasul tefillin were there anyway. And it was only because you went to Minyan did you leave them in the car and then go and get new ones. How did this person, what was he zoicha to these new ones? Because after collecting the money, which is a very miserable task, collecting money is not fun. After driving around the chassan, you know what a chassan's like? He barely knows if he's wearing shoes. His head, I would say chassanim's head, as they get closer to the wedding, floats higher and higher and higher. I teach chassanim before their wedding. Halacha and hashkafa. So as you get closer to the wedding, the classes get more futile. Because the distance between his head and his shoulders is eternity at that point. So it floats up and up and up and up and up and up. And they're not really, you know, dealable with. So you're dealing with a chassan a couple weeks before his wedding. The guy was driving around. He was going out of his kishkas with this guy. This shoes, that shoes, this suit, that's what he did. He didn't know left from right. He didn't know up from down. And then the morning of the wedding comes. And this guy could have looked at it, everything, and said, well, was it worth it? Is it worth all my time and all my efforts to help someone else? I have my own life. I have my own schedule. I have my family. It's I don't need to do something like this. But because he gave up for another person, because he said, I am not here for me, I'm here for others, I have to be bigger than myself, and this is what Hashem wants from me right now, he was zeicha that he ended up growing in a way that he couldn't imagine. He got kosher tefillin out of it. He learned that it's tefillin or pasul only because he helped the guy for the thousandth time on the second trip to the sefer. Did the sefer at that point mention to him about the fact that his tefillin were probably possible because they were burnt in the car, they were melted, and then he went and got kosher ones as a result? If he wouldn't have done that last trip, he would have never gotten his kosher tefillin for another couple of years. So when you give for someone else, you always gain. When you come to Paraduma is a mystical thing. The Kayin who sprinkles the ashes becomes impure, and the other person becomes pure. It's something we don't understand how it works. But we know that Chazal tell us, Paraduma has a few amazing things about it. When Moshe Rabbeinu went Bamaram, when he passed away, he saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaching something. What was HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaching? Paraduma. You see the greatness of Paraduma. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu, the Moshe Rabbeinu, the person who took divinity and brought it into the finite. He sees Hashem teaching Paraduma. That's what Hashem wanted to show him. The Midrash says that within Para Aduma is kolol, it's inclusive of all the exiles and as well the ultimate redemption. The Mashiach is tamon, is embedded within the topic of Para Aduma. Para Aduma as well is the kapara, is the atonement for the Chet HaEgel, the sin which brought the Yetzirah back into us. We are completely pure, cleansed, uplifted. And then Paraduma comes and helps us re-cleanse ourselves from the horrible sin which brought us down. So, we see a Paraduma is unbelievable. What's so unbelievable about it? What's so special about it? So, like I mentioned before, everything in the Torah has to be understood, is close to us to get something out of it. Rabidinsky Shlita and the Lubavitcher Rebbe as well explain the foundation of Paraduma as follows. Paraduma teaches us that I think in life, I have my life, I have my schedule, I have my learning, I have my family, I have my parnasa, and there's only so much I can do for other people. And sometimes if I give up for other people, I'm going to lose out myself. Paraduma teaches us that no. You're the Kayin. You're serving in the Beis HaMikdash. What's greater, what's higher, what's holier in the Jewish people's lives than the Avodah of the Kayin, of the priest? And you're going to go and give that up for a layman? This guy was Joe Shmo. He could have been the town drunkard. He was in the taverns. He becomes Tamei Meis. The Kohen says, I have to become impure so he can become pure. Explains to Rudinsky and Lubavitcher Rebbe that the foundational point here is that when you give up for yourself, the Kohen could say, I have to do more spirituality. I have to go serve. I can't do it for this guy. And Torah tells you, you must give up for someone else. And what happens? You bring the greatest purity in the world. This person gets purified from the deepest tumah, the deepest impurity. So the foundational point of Paraduma is something so deep, so real, and so relevant to our lives that we have to know that we have to be Bali Chesed, that we have to give up for other people, that we have to help the world, and even when it seems like it's coming at a certain level of cost, my time, my efforts, my spirituality, Hashem says, you are going to be bigger. You are going to be better. You are going to be uplifted and ultimately more pure than you were before. You continue on that is a ultimate atonement for the Chet Egel Hazav. The Egel Hazav, explains the Beis HaLevi, was a sin of a breaking of Achdus. It says, Naaseh v'nishma, we will Naaseh do, and we will hear. Besides all the famous explanations of it, the Beis HaLevi adds a new point to us. Naaseh is a pluralistic language. We collectively will do, we collectively will hear. He says, why are they saying that? He says, because at the time when they took the Torah on, it wasn't just saying they're going to do actions. It's saying we will together, Naaseh, as a nation, collectively do the Torah and mitzvahs. We will collectively then learn. As in, I'm taking responsibility for another yid. I'm taking an obligation to care about another yid. That was Naaseh v'nishma. It wasn't just about the mitzvahs. It was about creating unity in Klal Yisrael. What happened at the Paraduma, at the Chet Egel Hazav, explains the Beis HaLevi? They said, Eila Elekecha Yisrael. This is your God, Yisrael. They pointed at the other Yid who was doing it, and they said, I don't really want to be involved in Chet. I don't want to be involved in the sin. So, we need a leader. You're going to do the Avodah Zarah. You're going to do the Avodah Zarah. That's the exact opposite of Naaseh v'nishma. Naaseh v'nishma said, I'm going to care about another yid. If he's doing an aveira, if he's not doing a mitzvah, I'm going to be there for him. Chet Egel Hazav explains the Beis HaLevi from the Zayar that it was really the Eir of Rav who did it. And what was the Chet of Klal Yisrael that they said, I'm not caring about another yid. Oh, you're doing a Baruzar. It's a singular lashon. You're doing it. So the whole entire Chet, the whole entire sin of the Egel Hazav was that which we had a break in Achdus, a break in the unity of doing Torah and Mitzvahs together. So Paraduma says, I give up my spirituality even. I give up my Tahara for another Yid. It's the ultimate atonement for recreating unity. It shows that really, there's no difference between me and you. We're just one functioning system, and I don't prioritize me over you. As much as I can help you, I will. Because we're together in this. That's what Paraduma is, that I relinquish myself to others, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's nation. You go on the Parsha to Miriam. It says that Paraduma is next to Miriam, because just like Paraduma, Karbanas, create an atonement, so too Miriam's death, the Mises Tzadikim, create an atonement. So what's the relevance of Miriam specifically next to Paraduma, right? There should be a correlation. If we're learning that Miriam has an atonement through her death for Klal Yisrael, she gives an atonement, that's from Paraduma. So what's the correlation of Paraduma to Miriam? Why her? So if you look at Miriam's history, who was Miriam? Miriam Yocheved Miriam and Yocheved were Shifra and Pua, the two women, the midwives, who saved everybody in Mitzrayim. They saved the babies. Now, if you just think about this kind of story, you could say something very simple. Miriam was a Neviah, right? Yocheved was a Neviah, mother of Moshe Rabbeinu. They both could have said, listen, there's babies being born. We could save them, but what's that going to do? That's going to put me at risk. If I save the babies, Miriam could have said, it's going to put me at risk. I'm a Neviah, a baby. Who knows what the baby is? It could be a Tzaddik, it could be a Rasha, it could die the next day. How am I supposed to know? Suffolk and Vada, you go with the Vada. That's what Miriam could have said. But Miriam said no. Miriam said that I am here for one purpose, and that is to help other Jews. That is to care for other Jews. That is to give myself up to be there for others. That's who Miriam was. And what was she zeicha to? What did she merit because of that? She merited, says the Gemara in Soita, to have Mashiach come out of her. Where does Mashiach come from? Miriam. Bate Kuhuna and Bate Malchus. It says that Miriam got the house of Malchus, Mashiach ben David. That's something unbelievable. So where does she get Mashiach ben David from? Because she nullified herself for others. She relinquished herself for others. She said, I'm not here for me, I'm here for the Jewish people. She had all the cheshbonos in the world. You know who she was staring at in the face? Paroi. Paroi was like worse than Hitler. Paroi bathed in Jewish baby's blood. And he comes and says, Miriam, come here, I need to speak to you. What's with these Jewish ladies? All the babies are living. Now, I would not only be sweating bullets, I would just die on the spot. I would have died. Paroi looks at me in the face and says, what's going on with the Jewish babies? You're the midwives. I would have just been dead. It wouldn't have been a question. Miriam looks him in the eye and she goes, Paro, you don't understand. They're like animals. You don't get it, Paro. He goes, no. You have to kill them. Like, we're trying. Come on. Like, Paro, give us a break. You know these Jewish ladies. They don't abide by normal rules. They're like a bunch of animals in the field. Could you imagine such a thing? Could you imagine the strength it took to do that? The steel, nerves of steel. It's like there's like a Navy SEAL trying to do a mission, and there's looking at the murder of all murderers, the evil of all evils in the eye, and saying a blatant lie. How do you have such a courage to do that? Because you're not here for you. You're seeping. You're sapping away. You're pulling all your energies from the Jewish people and from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're making yourself bigger than you. And that brings all the geulas, the Midrashim are clear over and over. That what brings the Mashiach is the Achdus. So that's how you create Achdus. She was creating Achdus. She was saying, I'm not here for me. I'm something much bigger than me. I will save the babies. The Cheshbonos, I'm a Navi, I'm a this, I'm great. No. You help somebody. You don't make all your Cheshbonos. You figure out how I can be there for the Jewish people. What happens when Miriam dies? The Be'er stops, which is the continuation. She dies. The Be'er stops. The Be'er is the ultimate form of chesed. You give someone mayim, water. You give them what to drink. A surviving in a desert. What's a greater chesed than that? So her schus was an outcome, an outgrowth of her actions. Being the ultimate ba'alas chesed. That was what she did. So she had that schus. What happened when she dies? It stopped. Ask the Al Shech HaKadosh that it should have come back right away. By the Anani HaKavod later in the Parsha, it comes back right away. The Anani HaKavod, when Aaron passes away, the clouds go away, but they come back. B'schus Moshe. So why did the Be'er not come back? Asked the Al-Sheikh. So he says an amazing thing. And the Kli Yakar says the same thing. That when Miriam passed away, what happened? When Miriam passed away, what happened was Aaron and Moshe were getting ready to bury her. And they see the Jewish people coming from afar. And they said, oh, gewaldig, amazing, wonderful. The Jewish people are coming to be goymel chesed. They're coming to help us. Du chasadim. When they reached to Moshe and Aaron, what did they say? They said, please, we need water. Where's water? Moshe and Aaron said, what's going on over here? We have a hun in the via door, the person who gave us the water. You're not going to be goymel chesed? That's what they thought to themselves. So the nation created a certain lacking in being goyim al chesed, in giving to others. They didn't continue on her legacy, and therefore the Be'er stopped. Therefore, the water, the continuation of the Gemilas Chedes stopped because they weren't holding by it. Explains the Al Shech HaKadosh. You continue on. After that comes the Mei Meriva. The Mei Meriva is where Moshe Rabbeinu had a certain level of sin. And everyone discusses exactly what the sin was. All the Mefarshim. According to some, it was because he said, "You rebellious people. You rebellious people, you're asking for something again. You're talking not nicely." Others says it's because he hit the rock. The Kedushas Levi and others explain, really, it was all of these combined. He dealt with the people inappropriately. He didn't deal with them in the right way. And therefore, he ended up hitting the rock. And what was he trying to accomplish? Explains the Ramban, explains of Tzaddik, explains many, many Mefarshim, that Moshe Rabbeinu at this time was supposed to give Klal Yisrael something. He was supposed to give them a certain emunah, a certain Torah. It wasn't just about the physical water, it was beyond the physical water, it was about the true Mayim, Ein Mayim Elo Torah. He was supposed to give them a certain new heightened spirituality. But he couldn't succeed in giving that to them. That's where the sin was. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't get angry and scream, "You rebellious people." Like, you know, I get angry at my kids and I say, "Why did you do that? You're not being nice. You're being chutzpahdik." Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have an outlash, chas v'shalom, of chutzpah. And that was the anger. Moshe Rabbeinu chose to act with them in a certain hanhaga, in a certain fashion of chinuch. There is a fashion of chinuch, it's a very dangerous one, of showing anger. I think most people aren't really so relevant to it because they won't show anger, they're going to be angry. But Moshe Rabbeinu was able to show anger. And he thought that was the correct approach of chinuch. Seems to be that's what the Mefarshim had a problem with. And he wasn't able to bring up the Am and to give them the Torah like he needed to due to his slight veering off of what the right approach would be to give them something. So Moshe Rabbeinu, what's he doing in the story, according to these Mefarshim? He's trying to give them some spirituality, give them emunah, give them Torah, help them, bring them up. He falls. He fails in that. He doesn't get led into Eretz Yisrael. Him and Aaron together are grouped in this. How did he fail in this such a great task? He was the ultimate giver of the Torah. He was on Sinai, and he brought down the totality of the Torah. Why now could he not help them? Because at Har Sinai, they were ki'ish echad b'lev echad. Like we said, they were nasav nishma. They were holding in a place of giving to one another. But now, the Am, the nation, weren't being goyimel chesed in the way they needed to. They weren't giving to one another in the way they needed to. So the Midrashim tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu's level of nevuah, him being able to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu peh el peh without any differences, was dependent upon the Jewish people's level. It says, Vayikra, as a Lashon Chiba, Hashem called to him. That high level of nevuah came from Klal Yisrael being on a high level. Once Klal Yisrael fell, Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah fell. It wasn't as high of a level. So too, Moshe Rabbeinu's ability to help the Jewish people is as well dependent upon who? It's dependent upon Klal Yisrael. So if Klal Yisrael are not acting in the highest level, then Moshe Rabbeinu is not acting. He doesn't have the ability to teach, give, and care in the highest level either. So why did Moshe Rabbeinu not succeed ultimately at giving over these high levels of Torah, of Chesed, of Emes, of Emunah? Because Klal Yisrael wasn't on the highest level. Which is an unbelievable lesson that the strength of the Gedolim, the strength of the greatest people, of the Nevi'im, depends upon every single Jewish person. If you're living in unity, if you're living in a high spiritual level, if you're keeping Torah mitzvahs and learning, then the Gedolim will be on the levels they need to be. If we as a nation aren't living like that, our leaders lose strength. Our leaders aren't going to be what they could be. So why did Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately not do what he needed to do? Why did he not get into Eretz Yisrael? Why did Aaron not get into Eretz Yisrael? Because we as a nation weren't living in Achdus. The sin of all sins for Moshe in his world, where he, again, was not privy to go into the promised land, was due to us failing at Achdus, at Gemilas Chasadim, at caring for one another. This is the whole foundation of the Parsha. Due to this, you follow the Parsha, and what happens? Aaron HaKohen passes away. And what leaves? The Nani HaKavod. The Nani HaKavod represents the Sukkah. And the Zohar says the Sukkah is Aaron HaKohen as well. It's all together. Because Aaron HaKohen represented Achdus, caring for one another. It says that Klal Yisrael will all sit under one Sukkah. Lasa Lavoi. When Mashiach comes, the Messianic times, what's going to be? All of Klal Yisrael will be ba'achdus, says the Gemara in Sukkah. We're going to be together. So Sukkah represents us being unified, us being together, us being one. That's who Aaron was. What did Aaron HaKohen spend his time with? Was he someone who spent his time learning all day in the Beis Medrash? He's someone who was completely relinquished to the people. He didn't say, I need to learn, I need to daven, I need to be bigger, I need to be a Talmid Chacham. He went to every single Yid who was having a Shalom Bayis problem. He hears a couple fighting, throwing a pan at one another. He comes in and says, hey, what's for dinner? Put down the pan, let's cook dinner. And then he starts schmoozing with them. Then he figures out where their problems are, how we can bring them up, how we can help them. The Rambam says that when Aaron HaKohen heard about a Rasha, someone did an Aveira, Aaron would take note of it. Aaron would say, who's the guy? He would go up to him and he would make him feel uplifted. He would say, oh, hi, Beryl. How are you doing? And Beryl would say, Aaron HaKohen, speak to me. Stand up straight, speak to him, schmooze to him. Then Aaron would leave. Beryl would say to himself, oh, Aaron HaKohen spoke to me. I must be the most awesome guy. How can I do these averas? I need to do tshuva. This is the ultimate lesson for us of how we can help people. Do not put people down. Always bring people up. That's what Aaron HaKohen did. Aaron said, I need to bring you up. And you see that that's who he was. Moshe Rabbeinu as well. What was doing is helping the people. How many days did Moshe Rabbeinu learn? 80 days we know on the mountain, twice, 40 days, 40 days. And then it says he taught people, he taught Aaron and Yeshua and the Zakenim. There was a whole process. But what did he do? Me Baikar at Erev, from the morning until the night, what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? Moshe Rabbeinu, from the morning until the night, did one thing. Dealt with people. That's what Yisrael said to him. What are you doing? You need to help people. You need to help them efficiently. So we see that the leaders of Klal Yisrael all did one thing. They gave up themselves. Miriam, Aaron, Moshe. That's what the whole parsha is about. It's teaching us one lesson. That we have to be together. You have to walk in to every single situation and say, what's another Jew to me? He's my brother. He's my family. He's a part of me. He's attached to my soul. This is such an unbelievable lesson the parsha is teaching us. That from the beginning to the end, from Par Adum all the way to the death of Aaron, it's consistent lessons. The Torah telling you, give to your fellow Yid. Care about your fellow Yid. Don't consider yourself when it comes to others. I can always make a cheshbon and say, if I do this for Yenim, I'm going to lose out here. So unless it's a very extreme circumstances, the general attitude of all the Gedolim always was and always is to this day, is I give up of myself so I can help others. That's the Par Aduma. That's Miriam. That's Moshe. That's Aaron. So we all have to take a lesson from this. Next time, we walk into a shul, walk into a supermarket, see someone who looks funny. You'll see someone like looks a little funny. He could have strange glasses, a strange face, something. You kind of feel like a distance to him. Think he is my family. He is my brother. He is a part of me. And if we live like this, if we have an internal feeling, not just actions, an internal feeling of togetherness, of loving one another, of an actual connection, then we can actually create a unity amongst our nation. We should all be zeichet to come together and be together and live as a nation. And then we're going to bring the Geula now. What's stopping the Mashiach from coming? The last Beis HaMikdash was destroyed with Sinas Chinam, which means a distance between you and other Jews. If we want to bridge that gap, we need to be the bridgers of that gap. We need to create a unity. If Sinas Chinam stops, Mashiach's going to come. That's the mathematical equation. And that's why these parshas are always around. Av, Aaron HaKohen died in Av. He said, this is what's missing. The Ava, the connection, the reality of a Jew was always with me. Every single Jew. We should all be zeicha to, Be'ez Hashem, see the Beis HaMikdash now and do our part.